Hi, I'm Mike Dilk and you're listening to the Relax Back UK show, the show that explores all kinds of health topics relevant to you, your family and your friends. Each week I talk to expert guests from a range of backgrounds to inform and entertain you. So please do join the Relax Back UK family and stay tuned.
Hi, and thank you for joining me on the Relax Back UK show. My guest this week is Miranda Pascucci. She's a dental therapist, and the topic is the link between oral health and your overall health.
So having diabetes increases the risk of developing gum disease, and having gum disease increases the blood sugar levels, which increases your risk of type 2 diabetes.
It seems that these links can work both ways and cover more health conditions than you might imagine. As well as diabetes, oral health could affect your heart.
Unfortunately, there is a strong link between gum disease and heart disease. There's lots of evidence that shows the strong correlation. And, you know, gum disease contributes to this chronic inflammation that I talked about, and that the body being in that chronic inflammation state. And those inflammatory markers that are linked with gum disease, periodontitis, are also involved in atherosclerosis.
So keep listening for more reasons to concentrate on your oral health care. But first, let me invite you on a cycle ride, a little pedal. I will be on my Watt bike Tuesdays, Thursdays and Fridays at 12:30. And you can join me on the YouTube channel, my YouTube channel, which is Relax Back UK. But for now, stay right there for a great show. Thank you. So first of all, when chatting with dental therapist Miranda Pascucci, I wanted to know actually what exactly is a dental therapist?
Yeah, of course. So a dental therapist is a sort of sits in between a hygienist and a dentist. So my role within general dental practice is that you can come and see me for a checkup. I can do oral cancer screenings. And then if, for instance, you needed some treatments, sort of like a filling, a scale and polish, then I could carry that out for you as well. Any sort of further complicated treatment, like a root canal or a crown, then I would refer you on to see the dentist. And dental hygienists really sit with the gum disease and treating that side of things. So that's where I sit.
Excellent. All right. Good. Thank you very much for that. Now, what I'm keen to chat about is kind of the link between oral health, gums and teeth and other things in the body. Because there's been a lot in the news and on social media recently about the link between various things that can go wrong with your mouth and how that might affect different parts of your body. Yeah. And also the other way around, how things sort of going wrong with other parts of your body might affect your mouth. So it's kind of obviously a bit of a symbiotic relationship, I guess. And it loads of things are cropping up. So I'm keen to sort of explore just a few of those, if we may. And when we were chatting just now, you said, well, actually, you know, one of the most important things that there does seem to be a relationship between the two is diabetes. Yes. So yeah, tell us a bit about that. What is the relationship? Which way round does it go?
It goes both ways. So gum disease, sort of severe gum disease, which we call periodontitis, it has a bidirectional relationship with diabetes. So having diabetes increases the risk of developing gum disease, and having gum disease increases the blood sugar levels, which increases your risk of type 2 diabetes. So having diabetes, but also some of the medications that go along and treat diabetes you make less saliva, meaning that you're at more risk of sort of tooth decay, gum disease. Diabetes increases the amount of sugar, so glucose present within the saliva, which harmful bacteria in your mouth feed on. And then that forms plaque, which is the sticky film that develops on your teeth. If you've ever woken up in the morning and your teeth are a bit furry, that's plaque, and that is bacteria. And if left in situ for a period of time, that plaque becomes quite complex, matures, grows in numbers, the number of bacteria, and that leads on to gum disease and tooth decay.
Goodness. So you really do notice that if people are diabetic, that their teeth and their gums are likely to be in a worse state.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially if it's uncontrolled diabetes. And, you know, I've seen a few patients now over the last 25 years that they've come in and go, Miranda, my gums have started bleeding. My gums are sore. They're inflamed. They look red. And I don't really know what's going on. And I might take some x-rays. And, you know, 6 months ago, they're bone levels, which hold our teeth in our head, were quite normal. But 6 months later, it's quite destructive, and that bone levels have started to shrunk, which is gum disease, periodontitis in its form. And it's because they're unaware, and it's like, have you had a blood test recently? Have you talked to your GP about the possibility of having diabetes? And
Right.
they go away and they have these blood tests, and yeah, they have uncontrolled diabetes, and it often can show first off in their mouth.
So
And
you've actually sent patients off to their GP and then they've been diagnosed with diabetes. Okay, well, so you've probably done them a big favor in that situation.
I like to think so, yeah, but the mouth is the gateway to the rest of the body, where we've got chronic inflammation, so that's severe gum disease. Chronic inflammation, wherever it is in the body, it doesn't switch off like acute inflammation, and it can affect just about every part of our body, and it's a precursor to many chronic diseases, which we'll obviously go on to talk about. And it doesn't necessarily mean that, a risk is the cause of that, but it's a modifiable risk factor that we can, it's in our control. So
All
the
right.
more we can do, the
Interesting.
better. Yeah.
Well, let's look at another topic then. Everybody is talking about the gut biome, the gut microbiome at the minute. It seems like you can't turn on your computer or look at your phone without someone shouting about that. Now, you just said the mouth is the gateway to the body, obviously, because everything you eat goes through your mouth and ends up in your gut. So can, if you've got, well, can your oral hygiene really be good or bad for your gut? Because, you know, it's a long way. Your mouth's up here and your gut's down there. There's a lot in between.
Yeah, there is a lot in between, and it's part of our digestive system. So, in the mouth, we start to chew our food, we break down that food. We've got lots of enzymes within our saliva that start that digestive process, and that breaks it all down to sugars, and that follows the way down. Just like within our gut, we've got good bacteria and bad bacteria within our mouth, and it's always a balance within the body, isn't it? It's tipping that balance in the favor of good bacteria that can help break down the food and digest your food properly, or tipping the balance towards the bad bacteria, which can cause that gum disease, tooth decay. Again, back to sort of patients that I've seen in the past, like, oh, I've got really upset stomachs and I've got acid reflux and it's starting to affect my sleep and things like that. And it's like, well, actually that can affect your teeth as well. Like that acid reflux that comes from your stomach into your mouth can start to erode at your teeth and start some teeth wear as well. So it's just that balance is really, really
So it can very
important.
much in that situation go both ways. If you don't look after your teeth, that can affect your gut biome. And if you got a bad gut biome, such as you got acid reflux, you got more a more acidic mouth, which rots your teeth.
Absolutely. Our saliva is a wonderful substance, and we don't talk about it as much, but it's got some great factors about it. It neutralizes that acid within the mouth, it buffers things, it takes it, as you said, just from that acidic state to and lowers the pH, so our mouth can, and it tips that balance towards that good bacteria. And yeah, absolutely, that bacteria, if you have severe periodontitis or gum disease, that bad bacteria can travel anywhere within the body. So having good oral hygiene and, brushing our teeth twice a day, using an interdental brush, on top of that, in that 3 minute sort of oral hygiene routine is really, really important.
All right. Well, that but the thing with the gut, you know, it's kind of understandable because what you eat ends up going to your gut. But there are sort of people talk about other things as well. They talk about gum disease and heart disease being very closely related, which is a bit harder to, you know, from my point of view. I'm not in the health world, and I'm not a dentist. The relationship between those seems a little more kind of peculiar, unlikely. So is that a real thing? And if so, how can that possibly happen? How can that possibly work? And does that work both ways as well?
Absolutely. I can completely understand sort of someone in your position. It's like, how do you talk about teeth and heart at the same time? Like, how what's the link? And that, unfortunately, there is a strong link between gum disease and heart disease. There's lots of evidence that shows the strong correlation. And you know, gum disease contributes to this chronic inflammation that I talked about, and that the body being in that chronic inflammation state. And those inflammatory markers that are linked with gum disease periodontitis are also involved in atherosclerosis, which is heart disease, or bacteria has been detected in arterial plaque. So if you've ever had heart disease or know anybody has, that the arterial plaques is this buildup of debris within the arterial walls, and that narrows those tubes, so it doesn't work as well. So it's really important that that bacteria is controlled. So while brushing alone doesn't prevent heart disease, maintaining gum oral health reduces that inflammation burden within the body, which can help support cardiovascular health as well.
You've mentioned inflammation a couple of times.
Yeah.
And you also mentioned that influence markers or something markers. Can you explain those two things? Because inflammation to me is like if you get hit on the head by a cricket ball or something and you get a big lump on your head, that's inflammation. Yeah. But you're not talking about that, are you? Or are you?
Well, that would be acute inflammation. So you've suffered some kind of trauma and, you know, there's a cause to it. You've had that bang over the head with a cricket bat or the ball. And that your skin's gone red and it's swollen.
I don't play cricket, by the way. I don't know why I said that as an example. It just came to my
it's
head.
Fine.
But anyway,
we'll go with it. It's fine. I don't play cricket either, so I have no idea. But sure. So that's the inflammation sort of system like kicking in. So you start to notice it's red, it's swollen, it might ache a little bit, and that's because all the blood vessels are like rushing blood and healthy cells to that area. Your white blood cells start to kick in, and that does spike these inflammatory markers that we have in our body. Now, I'm not a doctor. I'm not going to go into what those, they've all got acronyms and names and things like that, but it triggers that inflammation response within that body, within our bodies. And if that's chronic and it's long lasting, the body's like, oh, I just don't know what to do with this. And it just travels around the body, and it can have that, like I said, that risk factor to cardiovascular disease, diabetes, so, strokes, okay. All of
bits
the above.
Throughout your body could become bigger, enlarged.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly that.
And if your blood vessels become enlarged, getting them enlarged sounds like a good thing because it won't necessarily constrict the flow, but I guess that's not exactly what happens.
No, and you know, if you have something like diabetes, your wound healing and how your body responds to inflammation doesn't work as well. So you're delayed healing, you don't heal as well. If you have a cut on your hand, you have gum disease, things will take a long time to heal just because of that inflammation that's going on within the body. And that's why, you know, controlling diabetes is really key, because then your wound healing kicks in and then you can control that gum disease. And it's just because of these inflammatory markers that are floating around all in the body, putting your body in sort of this chronic inflammation state, which, as I've just said before, so it's the precursor to many chronic diseases. So oral health is super important, and brushing twice a day.
So if you're seeing a doctor and getting help with your diabetes or your heart condition, are they likely to say, well, you need, one of the things is you need to pay more attention to brushing your teeth? I've never heard of a doctor saying that, but does that actually happen?
I would love for that to happen. I'm guessing there are many GPs and doctors out there that do talk about these things. And it is, we need to think about the body as a whole. You know, it isn't separate. You know, dentistry isn't separate from medicine. More and more evidence is coming through that everything is linked. What happens in the mouth can have an effect on the rest of the body. And again, sort of podcasts like this just gets that message out there that, you know, a doctor might be listening to this podcast and go, actually, I'm going to start asking my patients these kind of things, like, have they got gums that bleed? Have they? And then signpost them to their dental professional, which would be great if we're all on the same team, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. So is your part of the team kind of actively trying to get this across to doctors and GPs and people that help with diabetes and cardiovascular disease, etc.? Other than through my little old podcast.
Not just through your little old podcast. We have a whole education program here at TP. I work with pharmacy students. We've done some GP work, and it's just to get I'm only me and I've only got a little team, but we're doing our best to spread that message and just sort of linking the two together, the oral health and general health, or, you know, medicine. It needs to join up really and spread that message.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Imagine. Every day, clients walk into your office with their concerns about intimacy, identity, desire, and trauma. Questions that require more than basic training. Emotional and sexual dynamics are evolving, and today's professionals must evolve with them. We hear from parents unable to start conversations with their children around identity. Too often, adolescents have learned their sexual ideas from the internet. Couples have difficulty communicating about sex with each other. At the International Institute of Clinical Sexology, you can gain the specialized skills and knowledge to address those issues with confidence. Whether you are a therapist, coach, educator, or other healthcare professional, our advanced certifications and PhD program empower you to become a highly skilled, sought-after sex therapist. Expand your expertise. Elevate your earning potential. Start your journey today with the International Institute of Clinical Sexology. Imagine making a difference in our world. Learn more at clinicalsexologyphd.org.
Apples and pears, beef and Skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Deck, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com. Strawberries and cream.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Let me go on and ask you about another condition which people do talk about there being a link. And this is something, well, diabetes is getting more and more common. Yeah. But so is this one that I'm thinking of, dementia and Alzheimer's disease.
Yeah.
Again, how can there possibly be a link between how clean your mouth is and how well you brush your teeth and your brain?
Yeah, it's a fascinating sort of compelling area of research that's ever evolving. And you can go to Alzheimer's UK and there's lots of research on there. But research has identified that bacteria associated with gum disease is present in the brain of people with Alzheimer's. So again, that bacteria is traveling around the body and that's where it ends up. And the studies suggest that chronic infection and inflammation may play a role within disease progression. However, you know, that doesn't mean that oral health causes if you've got bad oral health causes Alzheimer's, but again, it's that modifying risk factor that we can all control with daily brushing and incidental cleaning as well.
Sure. Because my initial thought there was, well, you know, if you have dementia, you're probably less likely to look after your teeth that well anyway. Yeah. So how can you tell which way around it goes?
Yeah, it's really difficult with patients with dementia and Alzheimer's because, you know, they forget parts of their daily routine. They may forget to brush their teeth, or they have trouble with but also like depth perception. So just to us, what would be a simple task of putting toothpaste on a toothbrush, that becomes really difficult with someone with dementia or Alzheimer's. So then they might just think, oh, just give up. And especially when a person with Alzheimer's is non-verbal, they can't tell somebody to tell their carer or their, you know, there's lots of adult children of those parents that look after them as carers. They can't tell when they're in pain because they're non-verbal and they may drool, or they might not want someone near the mouth. So then, you know, a carer looking after someone with Alzheimer's then struggles to, you know, give good oral care and brush that person's teeth because the person's pulling away. And, you know, there's so many other, you know, debilitating factors to Alzheimer's disease that if you are a carer of someone with it, it's an awful disease to watch. And, you know, other things become priority other than brushing,
of course,
but actually
yeah.
it can make such a big difference in the quality of life for that person. You know, they may be on lots and lots of drugs that can cause dry mouth, and that can make the oral tissues really sore. But also, again, going back to that plaque builds up because it's a great, you know, condition for plaque to grow. And then they may end up with more tooth decay and gum disease, and then things become really sore. So it goes around in a vicious circle, unfortunately. And yeah, another message that I'm really wanting to get out there is, especially for our carers who work in care homes or residential homes, is that oral care is really important, and it can actually have a massive impact on these patients. You know, just the fact that being able to eat a meal and chew it efficiently without things being sore, or, you know, having enough saliva to chew that food and swallow it. You know, nutrition is so important, especially towards end of life and things like that. So, yeah, it's a big subject, really.
Something that you mentioned there kind of sparked a thought for me. You said that, you know, some drugs cause mouth dryness.
Yeah.
Now, I think I've experienced that, actually.
Really?
Now, what was it for? I think it was one of the blood pressure drugs that
I was taking, was it a
actually.
Blood pressure tablet?
And
yeah.
I developed a bit of a cough, and I think that was through general dryness. Now, there are probably lots of drugs that do a similar thing, and lots of people that are taking them and not, so people like me, and not thinking, oh, goodness, my mouth's a bit dry, it feels a bit dry, and linking the two.
Yeah.
Because what you've said about your mouth being dry, it becomes harder to look after your teeth and your gums.
Exactly. And you're absolutely right. There is, I haven't counted them personally, you know, because it would take me quite a while, but I think there's over 500 drugs where, you know, one of the side effects is you might have a dry mouth.
Yeah.
That's quite big. And especially as our population is aging and more medications, you know, someone in their 70s and 80s might be on 4, 5, 6 drugs for various different things. And if they've all got the side effect of a dry mouth, as you've rightly just said, it can be quite debilitating, you know, having a dry mouth. Saliva, again, I will go on about how wonderful it is. That's how we are able to taste our food. And I'm sure we've all experienced COVID when we couldn't taste our food. How dull life was when we couldn't taste our food, you know, when you get a cold. So that pleasure is taken away, but then also be able to digest that food properly, because saliva has all those wonderful enzymes that starts that digestive process. Speaking becomes really difficult because your lips start to stick to the teeth, and the tongue doesn't move as well. It becomes uncomfortable. You might be conscious of, oh, my breath doesn't feel fresh because it's a dry environment, and it can really impact people socially, you know, because they become, oh, I can't speak properly because my lips stick, or, you know, I wear a denture and it's uncomfortable because there's no saliva sort of lubricating the mouth anymore. And it becomes quite a social impact on them, and people can sort of withdraw. It has such a massive impact, but there are ways and means to sort of manage that.
I was going to say, if you can't stop taking the drug. So in my case, I complained, not because I thought it was the drug, but I said, you know, I've got a problem in my throat. Yeah. And they said, well, try a different drug. And then the problem went away. But if you can't try a different drug because you need it to keep you alive and your mouth gets dry, what can you possibly do, Miranda?
Yeah, absolutely. And please don't stop taking your drugs. Carry on taking them. We're not an advocate for that. If you can change them, then brilliant. But that isn't the option for some people, like you said, especially if it's on life-saving drugs. So frequent sips of water, chewing sugar-free chewing gum is really good. Things that will help sort of throughout the day. But with that, you know...
Chewing gum?
Yes. So that stimulates the saliva flow within your mouth.
Okay. All right, I wouldn't have guessed that. I tell my kids off for chewing gum. That's bad for you, bad for your teeth.
I know.
Am I right or wrong?
It doesn't look nice, does it? But sugar-free chewing gum, or, you know, it stimulates the saliva flow. So, yeah, you know, you're chewing something or eating fibrous food can stimulate that saliva flow within your mouth and just get it going a little bit. But going back to the frequent sips of water.
Hang on, before you do that, I say to my kids, your stomach is expecting food. You're chewing. It's going to be making acid. There's no food for it to digest. You're going to digest your own stomach.
I don't think that's quite factual, but what you tell your children is up to you. But no, it does stimulate that saliva flow. It makes things feel fresh as well. So again, if you're somebody's thinking, oh, my breath doesn't feel so fresh because my saliva isn't working as normal because of dry mouth, then that will freshen things up. But there's lots of things that you can get on the high street that can help with that. TP has their own sort of hydrating mouthwash that can be used, and sort of dry mouth products. We have a spray that can be used. You can pop it in your bag. It can be quite discreet and use that on the go, which is really useful to sort of stimulate that saliva flow, which is great.
Interesting. All right. Another thing that people talk about, maybe they don't talk about this one so much, but I know it is something that affects a lot of people, and that's sleep apnea.
Yeah.
So people kind of wake themselves up through snoring or all sorts of different reasons. And I think a lot of that is potentially sleeping with your mouth open.
Yeah.
Now, does that have, which way around does that work? Can that, if you have poor oral hygiene, can you sleep with your mouth open, or can sleeping with your mouth open lead to poor oral hygiene?
Yeah. So mouth breathing, sleep apnea often reduces back to saliva, my favorite fluid. That sounds right. It reduces the saliva flow. Our saliva flow reduces at night anyway, regardless, you know, you can be fit and healthy. Our saliva flow reduces anyway.
That's why you got to brush your teeth before you go to bed.
Exactly, because the bacterial. See,
I listened to you last time around.
Thank you. I appreciate that. But mouth breathing, sleep apnea reduces it even further. Dries out that oral tissues, and that can increase the risk of that plaque, that bacteria building up, which can lead to gum disease, tooth decay. That chronic dryness allows the plaque bacteria to build up more easily, especially overnight. And people with these sleep-related breathing issues should be really diligent with their, obviously, their toothbrushing just before they go to bed at night, which is great, but also that interdental cleaning with interdental brushes. But they also might benefit from some professional guidance if this is something that they're dealing with, because there's lots of help out there for them.
Goodness, there's a lot to this. Something else that people are talking about a lot at the moment, and it's something that is really difficult to avoid. And this might be a bit of an unfair question, but I'll ask it anyway. UPF, ultra processed foods.
Yes.
Now, everyone says, oh, they're bad for us. And they may well be, but are they specifically bad for our teeth and our gums?
Yeah, so UPFs are, you know, and rightly so, getting kind of a bit of a bad rap. And I'm all about balance. Like, you know, life would be no fun without, you know, sometimes having some cake or whatever. But, you know, it's all about balance. But those ultra processed foods do tend to favour sort of acid producing, so they're quite soft and sticky. So if you think about cake, it's soft and sticky. It's easily consumed, so tend to eat more of it. But it clings to the teeth, so that prolongs the acid exposure within our teeth. So unless you're brushing your teeth straight after, which most of us don't do, you know, that acid exposure is prolonged. That bacteria start to do more damage, and it just continues from there, and it imbalances that oral microbiome, going back to what we were talking about before. So yeah, having a balance with obviously whole foods, fiber rich foods, which support that saliva flow, and a more balanced microbial environment makes sort of a better place to be, really. You know, that balance with UPFs and yeah, thoroplaque control. I will preach about it for a long, long time. But, you know, it's brushing, but also that in-between cleaning, which is really important.
All right. Goodness. So, I mean, we've covered an awful lot of things. So I must admit, before our chat, I did a little Google to try and find a list of things that can be connected to oral health, either causing the problem or the whatever it is causing the oral health. problem, whichever way round. And I was, you know, I was amazed at the sheer number of things.
Yeah, and we've not even gone into menopause and women's hormones and pregnancy, all of that. There's a whole other.
All right. Well, look,
there's loads of stuff that we've not covered.
Well, I mean, that sounds like it could be another show on its own.
Yes, absolutely.
But we've got a couple of minutes left.
So of course.
Let's just talk about the menopause then. You mentioned it. How can there possibly be a link between menopause and oral health? And what is it? Which way round?
Yeah, it's due to our hormonal changes during menopause. That falling estrogen levels reduces, again, saliva flow, which can alter that oral microbiome, increasing the risk of dry mouth, gum inflammation. Lots of women that I've seen in that perimenopause, menopause stage suffer with a burning mouth sensation, which is really sort of distracting and irritating. And it also accelerates the bone loss around the teeth. So as I mentioned earlier, the bone is what keeps our teeth in our head. But because of these hormone decreases and things, the hormones sort of decreasing and moving around, it can cause all sorts of issues. And because the gums are quite hormone sensitive, the menopause can make them more reactive to plaque. So any sort of minor buildup of plaque bacteria, the gums can sort of have a reaction to it and become inflamed, which, again, go back to the brushing and the interdental cleaning is really, really important in that time. But that can happen during pregnancy. That can even happen cyclical every month when a woman goes through their periods every month as well.
Right. Goodness me. Do women still get free dental care when they're pregnant on the NHS? They always used to.
Yes. Okay. I've not been aware of any changes.
All right. Because I remember when my wife was pregnant, really trying to get her to take advantage of that. Like, go, because this is a time when it can really affect your teeth. So, and I think she did. So that's probably a good thing to put out there.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Go to the dentist and get things sorted because things are likely to go wrong.
Yeah, exactly. You're just putting yourself at more risk, unfortunately, just because of the hormone changes. And, you know, again, back to sort of gum inflammation and periodontal disease, it can have an effect on babies and preterm sort of birthing rates as well. You can have issues with that. Like I said, this is a whole other podcast.
you will be invited back. Don't worry. But for now, perhaps because we've spoken about a lot of different things.
Yeah.
If you can point people, if they're interested and want to look up more, to some good sources of information, probably good websites that say the sorts of issues that might crop up. But also, if you have maybe some pointers to any scientific study, possibly, you know, peer-reviewed, published papers, if people want to go dig into it a little bit more, because on this show, we like data, we like stats. And then we haven't really gone into specific data and stats, but if we can point people to where they might find some of these things if they want to, that would be really helpful, I think.
Yeah, of course. Lots of really useful websites out there. So, you know, Diabetes UK is a really, really good website to sort of dive into diabetes and how gum disease. There's the British Society of Periodontology. There's a plethora of studies to do with diabetes, Alzheimer's, stroke, heart disease. There's lots of good information on there. Alzheimer's UK, again, have got lots of studies as well. But one particular study is periodontitis and diabetes, the two-way relationship, so that bi-directional relationship that we've just talked about. Again, you just put that into Google and it will come up. But there's lots of studies on there. If you go on to PubMed, the National Library of Medicine, there's lots and lots of studies on there. There's too many sort of for me to pick which ones are my favorite.
Excellent. Okay, look, this is really interesting and you know, important. I think it's potentially really going to help a lot of people. So Miranda, thank you so much for taking the time to chat.
You're very welcome, and there's lots of information on tp.com as well. You'll be able to find lots of things on there. So thank you for your time again.
Very fine, thank you.
Take care.
Thank you very much to my guest this week, Miranda Pastucci from TP, a dental therapist. I just want to remind you about my book, Cut the Crap, Ask the Questions That Matter About Your Health. That's available on Amazon. And it's a great read, very interesting for anyone who's interested in health at all. It has information from previous guests on the Relax Back UK show, and again, it's available on Amazon. Thank you for listening today, and have a healthy week until next week.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving, it's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
Sarah wasn't bad at her job, she was stuck in hidden grief. After her dog died, she took a sales role just to stay busy, but every pitch felt empty. A Cogna Movement session uncovered that she was seeking the warmth of her dog rather than serving her clients. Using our patented movements and sensory patterns, she cleared the grief and rocketed to the top. What hidden emotion is holding you back? Try our Essentials program at the special UK Health Radio rate. Visit cognamovement.com/radio or click on the Cogna Movement banner on the UK Health Radio homepage. Results vary.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Thanks for listening to the Relax Back UK show. Join me, Mike Dilk, again next week for more fascinating interviews and chat. If you're listening to the podcast version, please subscribe, like, and share it with your family and friends. And have a healthy week. Until next week.